With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray. Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Keith Smith, a friend of the show, reoccurring guest from Yahoo Sports. Keith, what's going on?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me back on. A lot going on in the world right now. Where I'm in Orlando. We're trying to ramp up for the return of the NBA here in town with us. And unfortunately, our coronavirus cases are exploding all over. So right off the jump, I'm going to use that as a plea to wear your masks. And if you're an NBA fan, please, when you're in the area, wear your masks so that the NBA will still come here and finish out their season. Please, 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 please.
Wise words from Keith right there. Wear your mask because, hey, come on. They've taken basketball from us for far too long. We need it back, and we're getting to right around, I want to say it's about 40 days until the NBA is going to resume play. Keith, you were one of the original, if not the first people, I feel like, to pitch the idea for the NBA to resume play in Orlando. You are very familiar with Disney. Can you tell us about the complex over there? I've never been to the complex. I've been to Disney World, but never seen where they're going to play. What is that area like?
Yeah, so you're not alone in not having been to the World of Sports complex. As a guest, I've learned a lot of times, people they don't even know it exists, never mind never even being there. And I think what is interesting is how much people, they come here, and I did the same thing before I started working here. You throw your bags down in your room and you run off to the theme parks, and at the end of your trip you leave tired and poor, and that's the goal, right? Is you had a lot of fun, you wore yourself out, and you spent a ton of money. But the sports complex is massive. It's over 200 acres of fields and arenas. There are three arenas over at that side of the property that they're going to use. They're going to set all of them up with at least one game court. Well, not at least, with one game court inside each arena. And then there's going to be a couple practice courts set up in that area as well. They're also going to do some practice type facilities set up in some of the convention spaces that are attached to the hotels where the players are going to stay. So they're going to have that set up as well. It's really going to be a pretty nice setup for them. They're going to have everything that they need or could possibly want from a basketball side will all be set up at the sports complex. And it's gonna come off, it'll look weird because there's not gonna be any fans in the stands, but it's gonna look like you're used to watching just a regular basketball game, just minus a crowd.
That's gonna be interesting to see, because I feel like fans right now, we feel like, oh yeah, that'll be no big deal, whatever. But until you actually see it with no fans in there, it's going to be pretty weird. But at the same point, hey, if you're as diehard of an NBA fan as I am, you just want to see these players play regardless of who's in the stands. But I thought it was kind of interesting the way that they divided these teams up in tiers. Like, the better teams are staying at, I guess, a nicer hotel. I mean, is there really that much difference in the hotels where these teams are staying, because it's not like the NBA is going to feed, you know, like, or place teams like, you know, the Suns and the Wizards in a far less, you know, classy establishment as some of the other teams. What's the difference here?
Yeah, no, there's no Joe's Roadside Motel where you might be sharing your bed with some critters. No, none of that's going to be going on. All three of the resorts are actually pretty comparable. What's interesting is, so Walt Disney World, they break their resorts down into three buckets. There's the deluxe resort, the moderate resorts, and then what they call value resorts. And even the value resorts, that's like more like what I stay in when I was traveling here, and even now would stay in. They're still really nice, and that's not even what they're using. The Grand Destino Tower at Coronado Springs it's an interesting place. That's where the teams that are expected to stay in the playoffs, I guess, the longest, are, if you want to put it that way. That's where they're going to stay. Now, Coronado Springs is a moderate resort. It's also Disney's primary convention hotel. But what they are is the way they've kind of got that that tower set up is it's brand new. It only opened last fall. So when you think about the fact that Disney closed in March and hasn't been open to guests, it hasn't really been open to all that very many people since it opened. And it is built to attract high-end convention business. So it's a luxury tower. So it's really nice. It's going to be close to what NBA players are used to when they're on the road. It's not exactly the Four Seasons, but it's a pretty nice setup. Then Grand Floridian, which is where the playoff teams, but maybe not in the playoffs for so long, mm-hmm. are staying. That's Disney's flagship resort. That is the number one hotel that you see when you see a lot of the marketing. It's the one, if you're ever seeing like shots of like the Magic Kingdom, it's the one that's kind of off to the left hand side. It's painted white with like a reddish orange roof, and it's gorgeous. You go by it when you're on the monorail. If you're riding the monorail, it's a really nice hotel. And then the third, which is the teams that are going to have to fight their way into the playoffs, is the Yacht Club. And the Yacht Club is it's a sister hotel with the Beach Club, to the point where most people just refer to it as Yacht and Beach because they are so tight there. They actually share a pool. It is without a doubt the best pool on Walt Disney World property. It's like a mini water park. It's really cool, but it is set up very differently as well from that standpoint, where it's kind of a smaller hotel and it's a little more by itself over there with the Beach Club, and it's close to a couple of theme parks, which isn't going to really matter because they're not coming and going to the parks as much. But the idea is get those teams in there, then they'll finish up, they'll take them out of the Yacht Club, and then they're going to send them off. Those rooms will get turned back over to Disney will do their part to get them ready to get back in their inventory for guests, and then the Grand Floridian will do the same thing. And I have been told by folks with Disney that if a team advances further than they are expected, they may be asked to change resorts at some point and move into one of the others. But Grand Destino Tower, Coronado Springs, that's going to be the hub for the full 3 months. Whoever makes the run, they're likely to come out of that group, and they're going to be there for quite some time, about three and a half months.
It's going to be really interesting because, a lot of time's gone by. I mean, almost basically what feels like a full off season. So you're really going to see who's been working and who hasn't. But when you're talking about, making a deep run, for at least the first 7 weeks, Keith, we're talking about no friends and family able to visit. I mean, how much of a problem is this going to be for some, NBA, guys? I mean, this could be, maybe someone has a pregnant wife or just gave birth or, whatever it is. You're going to be away from family for quite some time. Do you think there's going to be any star players that potentially say, I'm not going?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think, what you're going to see, like we just saw Kelly Oubre of the mm-hmm. Suns. It was just announced he's not going to come and play. But that's and people kind of ran with that a little bit. But he's also coming off an injury, and he was questionable to play for the rest of the season anyway. So that is, you've got a guy like that who's not going to play. And you might have a couple more guys on that side. But I don't think you're going to see very many players, and this is all assuming, things don't go absolutely bananas here with the case numbers continuing to rise.
It's not helping.
You're going to see guys. No, it's certainly not helping. That's definitely true. But I don't think you're going to see guys sit out because I think the vast majority of the players want to get here. One thing I think that is really helping is there's no Golden State Warriors inevitability hanging over this season of like, well, they're going to win it no matter what. There are seven or eight teams that truly believe like, yeah, we had a chance if things broke right. Talking to people from those teams, that belief is only stronger now because of the fact that it is when they start looking at things, they start thinking about, hey, man, like we don't need it to break right now. Now there's no home court advantage. There's no this, there's no that. And they feel really good about it. So I think there is a really good chance you're going to start seeing, you know, some of these teams show up here and be really ready to go out of the gate. And I think they're going to use those early, you know, handful of weeks, like you said, 6-7 weeks to really focus on, all right, let me get into the playoffs. Let us get that moving. And then as we advance into the later rounds, that's when the families can join and the friends and all that. And we'll move forward from there. But a lot of these guys, they shut it down when it's the playoffs anyway, to some extent, where they try to limit all outside distractions as it is. Like LeBron famously, right? What does he do? He does a zero dark 30 or whatever he calls it. You know, a lot of those guys, they might not do it quite as publicly as he does, but a lot of guys do those sorts of things where it's the playoffs. This is where my focus needs to be. So I don't think it's going to be all that big of an issue.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that all NBA fans are looking in right now is the potential play-in tournament. You know, the battle out west for that eighth seed was actually really heating up once the season went on hold. I mean, it really feels like the NBA wants the Pelicans to get that seed. They would never say that, but it feels like that play-in was almost designed to say, hey, could we get maybe a team like the Pelicans in there? Potentially a Zion versus LeBron matchup. Out of those teams, just, you know, your opinion, who do you think maybe might snag that eighth seed in the end? Because the Blazers are a team that's healthy now. You know, they've gotten some guys back. I mean, the Pelicans are playing good ball towards the end. The Grizzlies were the team that kind of out of that group played the best all year, you know, out of that, you know, four or five teams. And then you got a team like the Spurs where LaMarcus Aldridge, another guy who elected for surgery, it looks like the Spurs' run in the playoffs is over.
Yeah, 22 years straight for San Antonio. And one of my favorite stats is in there. This is, I believe, their 43rd NBA season. I might be off on that. But I know this part is right. They've only not made the playoffs four times in those 40 plus years that they've been an NBA franchise. And in two of those years, one year they got David Robinson, the other one, Tim Duncan. So that's how you pull together a 22-year playoff run, right? Is when you're doing things like that. So, you know, but yeah, I think they're probably done. I still favor the Grizzlies because one team's you got to catch them first. You got to get to within four games, and I believe they've got a 3.5 game lead. So that's already kind of a big-ish ask to ask a team to get there. Then you got to beat them twice, and you got to beat them twice in a row to get that final playoff spot. If anybody's going to pull it off, I'm going to favor the Trailblazers. I think Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum have proven that they can win some games on their own. They're also going to get Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins back, which is huge. They haven't had those guys really all year. Collins got hurt early on, and Nurkic hasn't played yet this season. So I think the fact that they're healthy, they've got some depth now, I think that they're going to be a team that could really make a run at this. So I think if anybody's going to chase down Memphis, I would give it to Portland with an outside, you know, shot at the Pelicans. I think, you know, the challenge for the Pelicans is if we had played out the season the way it was supposed to go, they were playing pretty good basketball. They were getting healthy themselves outside of JJ Redick, who was, you know, dealing with a hamstring issue. But they had a very easy closing schedule. So I think they might have run the Grizzlies down from behind. But here, I think, you know, there's just, you know, while the Wizards and the Suns and maybe the Spurs, because of the situation, aren't all that good of teams to play, there's no real gimme games on this schedule at Walt Disney World. And that's going to be tough for them to, you know, kind of make up that ground.
No, it really is. So it's definitely going to be interesting. A team like the Blazers, you know, people forget they were in the conference finals last year. And Dame, you know, Dame Lillard was playing some of his best basketball this year and had gotten hurt. So they were like that team where you really never saw them at their full capacity this year. But who's maybe one of the playoff teams that you feel like is getting healthy at the right time? Because I'm going to be biased here, and I'm going to say my Indiana Pacers, you never got to fully see them at full strength because Oladipo missed half the season. He came back, he looked rough, and then Brogdon, you know, that was like the backcourt you wanted to see that you only got to see a handful of times. Both guys are healthy now. And then the Sixers, a team that I felt underperformed all year, it feels like they're healthy now with Ben Simmons and Embiid. So very curious to see what's happening, kind of, you know, once we resume play.
Yeah, you took two of them in the East. I think, you know, Malcolm Brogdon approximately had about 97 different injuries this year, I think.
Pretty much.
It might be a little even low, I feel like. You know,
yeah.
Every day there was a different part of it, you know. And I feel like if you could hurt the left body part, he then also a week or two later hurt the right body of the same, you know, it was like good, scary symmetry there would be the way to put it. But yeah, they're a team to watch, definitely, because I think, you know, he seems to be healthy and ready to go. Oladipo should be hopefully ready to go. You love the front court there. You know, they've got, you know, really good production out of Sabonis and Warren. Miles Turner, a little bit of a down year for him, but,
yeah,
you know, I mean, who the heck knows what guys are going to do coming back off this, you know, ridiculously long break of, you know, which will be 4.5 months by the time they actually play games. You know, it's gonna have been that long before, you know, we see anybody suit up again. So that'll be interesting. Sixers, absolutely. Ben Simmons, you know, he was going to be questionable to even be in the playoffs, and now you know, we're seeing reports and clips of him playing pickup games and looks pretty good. So hopefully he'll be back and ready to go. I think the Celtics in the East, while they weren't, they didn't have guys necessarily out a lot like Indiana did or Philadelphia did. Kemba Walker was dealing with knee soreness, and all accounts are, he looks pretty good and should hopefully be healthy. Jaylen Brown had ankle and hamstring injuries with both legs, which was really limiting him, and it sounds like he's ready to go, so I think they're going to get healthy. And then in the Western Conference, the team that, not necessarily guys were missing games, but the Houston Rockets, because they were playing that small lineup where, you know, Robert Covington was the biggest guy in their opening lineup, in addition to playing small physically, they were playing a very short rotation. They were only playing 7 or 8 guys most nights. So you were asking guys to play up a position or two, and then guys were having to play, you know, in the high 30s, 40 minutes. They looked like they were wearing down a little. That's been a continuous issue with James Harden over the years. He hits the playoffs and he just doesn't have enough gas left to do that. They're a team I'm really watching out west to say, well, you know, they might have really benefited from this time off, and they might be able to make a real run here at this thing and do some different stuff. So I think it is, you know, they're the team I'm going to have an eye on, you know, when they start. A lot of variance in their game because they shoot so many three-pointers and the like, but I really do. I think they've got a chance to look really, really good here when the season restarts.
Also, I mean, when it just shows how long, you know, these teams have been off, I mean, you've obviously seen the weight loss from Jokic. I mean, this is a guy who mentioned he kind of came into the season out of shape and started to really play his way into shape. He looks like a completely different person right now, and I'm curious to see how that's going to pay off, because for the guys that have been working, I mean, this is an opportunity to really, you know, flip the script and come out and be healthy, or come out and just be a new team. While then there's also teams like, you know, the teams that were hotter, like the Lakers, I feel like were, you know, all year they had been great. You want LeBron to have time off. He's now had a ton of time off. Same with Kawhi. I mean, these are guys who you think it should benefit them, but there are teams like maybe the Bucks that all season long were dominant. Do you think maybe it's possible that their momentum could be halted and we could see maybe a surprise team kind of come out, one that we would have never expected without this type of layoff?
Yeah, I do think that's possible. I think, you know, there is always the ability of, you know, it's just like whether it's a game or a hot streak of, you know, several games in a row, the last thing you want is time off, right? Because you're playing so well. If you have a great first half, you don't want the half to end. You know, you want to just, you know, let's skip halftime and keep going. If you are, you know, on a win streak, the last thing you want to do is run up against any kind of break. And while the Bucks had slipped a little bit going into the pause, I think they had actually lost 3 straight. They were still the best team in the league record-wise, and had played quite well. You mentioned the Lakers. So I do wonder with them. I wonder with the Clippers, with this kind of compressed schedule in Orlando, are they going to be all right? Because their whole thing all year long has been set up around, well, we got to keep Kawhi and Paul George healthy. If there's anything going on, they're going to sit and they're going to rest, and they're not going to do back-to-backs, and they're not going to do, you know, 3 and 4 nights and all these things where we're really going to watch this and keep those guys healthy. Well, there's no avoiding that here now, and in these games all count. And then once you're in the playoffs, we're hearing there might even be back-to-backs in the playoffs and those kind of things. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. But yeah, you know, what's funny is I talked to one coach, and he told me, keep an eye on those young teams, because I think those young teams are the ones who they're going to hit the ground running. They're going to, you know, race out of this thing, and they're going to look really good. That very same day, I talked to another coach who said, man, I don't trust the young teams in this environment because no crowd, right? No one, no fans to lift them at any point. You know, those are the guys who are more likely to have somebody do something silly and, you know, wander off the campus and go do, you know, something dumb that costs him and his team and those kind of things. So it's just funny, the more people you talk to, it's interesting. I really think that just the conversation I'm having is nobody really knows at all what to expect, except the one consistent thing I've heard is what you want to have coming out of this is a superstar bucket getter, because those guys could not play for a year. You could throw them a ball, let them get stretched out, and then they're going to go get you points. And that's something that everybody is saying. This might be a little ragged. Guys might be a little bit off as we restart this thing. You know, look at those guys as the guys who could really come out there and make it happen for you.
There truly is no blueprint to this, and you know, we hope that this never happens again. What do you think the long-term perception is going to be of the winner of the NBA championship, you know, at the end of this season, if it is not, you know, a Lakers or Bucks? Say, for instance, a team comes out of nowhere and wins it. Is there always going to be an asterisk saying, well, yeah, that was the COVID-19 season?
I hope there's no asterisk. I have no problem if it is a footnote, which, you know, some people are like, what's the difference? Well, I think an asterisk is it's demeaning and takes away from the accomplishment. Or I think a footnote, I think back to 1999. Now, you were probably just a young guy then. And, you know, I imagine I'm considerably older than you. But I remember watching that Spurs championship, and it gets mentioned, right? Oh, that was that weird lockout season where they only played 50 games. And that's true, but nobody ever comes back and says, yeah, that champion, that didn't really count for Pop and Duncan. You know, it wasn't a real thing. I think you're going to get the same thing. It's going to be, oh man, you know, Team X, you remember that weird year where, you know, the season shut down and then everybody played at Disney and they won, and everybody will be like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then that'll be the extent. But I don't discount it, because all the teams are coming from the same place. They've all been off roughly the same amount of time, within a day or so of each other. They're all kind of coming in with a chance. If anything, everybody's kind of gotten healthy again, hopefully, you know, we hope. Now, we saw Bojan Bogdanović from the Jazz as he tried to ramp back up. He couldn't go, and that's, you know, unfortunately that knocked him out. But I think, you know, ultimately we're looking at these things, and we're going to see these guys kind of come in and hopefully be ready to go. And I think you're going to get, it might be a little sloppy early on, but I think you're going to get really good competitive basketball, because that's the one thing the coaches are consistent in, is these guys play pickup games in empty gyms, and they're some of the best games you never have ever seen. You know, and that's with nobody else around. So now you're talking, they at least know there's TV and all these things. So I think once they're out there and it's competitive juices, and they, you know, have an eye on the, you know, the Larry O'Brien trophy and get themselves a ring, I think it's going to come through. And I think whoever's going to run this gauntlet without the aid of any home court advantage or anything like that, it's going to be massive. I think whoever it is, I'm going to, you know, consider them as worthy a champion as anybody has ever been in the league.
Oh, completely. I do not think that this is going to be an asterisk type, you know, win. I think it's always going to be just looked at as like, hey, it was an interesting season. You know, you kind of broke it up into two different spots. But I don't want to get you too fired up here, because I know that, you know, you can get jacked up when it comes to the finances, the salary cap over the NBA. But what would the impact be financially if the NBA is unable to resume play? Because you got guys that are going into free agency, obviously, but then you also have players that are eligible for extensions, like Jason Tatum, a guy who you're very familiar with from covering, you know, loving the Celtics. What is the impact financially if the league can't resume play?
Yeah, it's going to be huge, and now you're winding me up, so go get a drink, go watch binge a couple shows, and then come back, and I'll probably be just about done. No, for real, it's huge, it's massive. It's about $1 billion that's at stake by not having the playoffs. That's, you know, the most lucrative part of the season for the NBA. So it's absolutely huge that they, you know, make every attempt to try and pull this off. And I think, you know, what's going to ultimately happen here is let's say the players, you know, in unison said, we're not coming, you know, unanimously, we're done. We're not going to play. We don't think it's the right thing. Well, then what's going to happen is the owners would then turn around. They're going to rip up the CBA because they're going to enact the force majeure clause, which is, you know, their right to do when X amount of games are lost. And then they would, you know, tear up that CBA, and it's never going to be as favorable for the players again as it is right now. So that is, you know, why nobody wants that. The owners don't want that. The players don't want that. So what you're going to see, though, is the cap is going to be impacted next year one way or another. Now, there's a lot of different proposals that are being talked is, you know, do you do some form of leveling or smoothing, which, if you remember back a few years, was, you know, roundly rejected by the players union because that was forcibly keeping salaries lower than they should have been. This is a different thing. This is keeping them a little bit higher, but then not, you know, no giant spike, you know, a couple years down the line. Because if you just let the math work through the formula, the Caps, even right now, even if they play the playoffs, is going to bottom out to, you know, 80, 90 million, which is about, you know, 20 to 30 million off where it is right now. Today, it's 109 and change. Mm-hmm. It could be 80 or 90. So that's a huge challenge. Right? You just can't. And nobody wants that because hopefully, you know, I don't know, knock on wood real lightly here. You know, in a couple of years, things are back to normal and everything is, you know, where it was. Now you've got a cap of, you know, $125 million and you're going to see a, you know, $30 million cap spike in a year. Nobody really wants that either. We all saw what happened, you know, that summer and some of the contracts.
Disaster. Right. 2016 was just,
it was a mess. Yeah, so nobody really wants that either. So what I think you might see them do is artificially prop up the cap next year. That this is all assuming that they're able to finish out this year and everything goes okay and they're able to have the full playoffs. So they prop up the cap and then they move forward from there. And I think that is something, you know, we're gonna, you know, look at them doing because I think that makes the most sense, you know, possible is, you know, this is how we're setting this thing up and this is where we're gonna go with that. So I think it's you know, gonna be interesting to see where it goes. But yeah, it's a rough market. Now you talked about guys like Tatum, you know, Donovan Mitchell, Bam Adebayo, all these guys who are extension eligible this coming offseason. And I wanna be clear because I'm seeing a lot of confusion about this. These guys are all under contract for next year. They've mm-hmm. still got one more year on the rookie scale. But as of how it works in the NBA is it's a year out. You sign those extensions. They've got insurance policies right now that cover them, but those policies run out June 30th. Well, nothing's really happening before then. So what they're looking at is, you know, can those be extended? How hard are those to collect on anyway? Because the first thing an insurance company fires back with is, well, you know, you're really going to miss out because of injury. Then explain to us how Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant both got full max deals, you know, a year ago when they were both coming off potential career ending injuries, you know, explain that. And that's where it gets really hard because insurance companies don't want to pay out millions of dollars. So that's another challenge there. So what some of the players, the agents and some of the teams themselves are pushing for is if we can sign these max extensions in a couple months, you know, when the season is over, can we just do it now? Take that, you know, thing. My personal opinion and preference is, if it's a max deal, let them sign it. If it's anything less than the max, then I would say, nope, you got to wait. Now you got to wait. But if you're going to commit a full max deal to the player, why do you have to wait a couple more months? Go ahead and do it. Anything else, we'll see in the offseason when the season's over and we'll go from there. But I understand why the players are, you know, have some concern and hesitancy. But I've also been told it's not going to keep any of them from playing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that last part. It sounds like, you know, everyone's going to finish out the season, and I do think that they will be. Those guys that you mentioned, you know, the Donovan Mitchells, the Jason Tatums, I think they will get those max contracts. When you talk about anything less than that, it could get a little bit foggy in terms of what the salary cap will end up being. But one thing that I feel like a lot of NBA fans are a little bit confused about is the comments from Kyrie Irving. I feel like we've all heard 10 different things. What was the gist of what Kyrie was trying to get across? Because it didn't seem like he was really doing himself any favor, and it seems like he caught a lot of backlash.
Yeah, it's tough. I go to what, you know, I heard from a couple of players, and I believe Woj reported a direct quote from an anonymous player was, I don't really care for him as the messenger, but I care about the message. And I think that is really important to note and understand is, yeah, Kyrie's a different kind of guy. I covered him for 2 years with the Celtics, and I can 100% tell you it was exhausting. You know, he's just, you know, weird, different kind of guy. I mm-hmm. once asked him about a pick and roll coverage and got an answer that had nothing to do with basketball that went on for about 2 straight minutes. And then I asked him, you know, a little more of a complex question, and he didn't reply at all. He, you know, just, I don't know, man, and let it go. So he's a very different guy. But one thing, he's not an idiot. You know, he's not crazy. He has some thoughts that are 100%, they're out there, you know, and mm-hmm. they're different kind of, you know, things that not a lot of people think. But, you know, he's not crazy or anything like that. So I think, you know, when you really look at Kyrie Irving, what I think people don't necessarily understand with him is his role as a vice president in the Players Association. And let's be clear, he's not the vice president. He's one of several, is to ask hard questions and is to, you know, make sure everybody is, you know, getting all the information they can. So I don't fault him at all for what he did. And there are some people saying, but they had already agreed to play. That's not what they agreed to at all. What they had voted on and agreed to as a players union was 22 teams, 8 games, play-in tournaments, it'll all be in Orlando, full playoffs. That's what they had agreed to. They had not agreed to, we're definitely coming back to play. And the Players Association was very clear in their statement of, this is what we agreed to, and what's next now is all the details that are the things that really matter. You know, the health and safety, and what are these things like? And Kyrie brought up very good points with, is this the time with the Black Lives Matter movement finally having progress in this country after, you know, hundreds of years? It feels like, you know, there might actually be momentum and positive change coming out of this. Is this the time for us to step out of our communities and just go back to playing basketball? And I can't answer that, you know, yes or no. You can't answer that. You know, nobody can. That's a very personal, individual decision for every player. So for me, all I want every player to have is all of the information available to them. Health and safety. What is the NBA going to allow them to do to support the Black Lives Matter movement? And what is the financials if I play or don't play? Then the player can go and make whatever decision is best for him and his family. And nobody should be critical or, you know, angry at them for that. You just support it and you move on and off you go. Because I don't want this to turn into something where, you know, all of a sudden these guys are, you know, being ripped apart because they chose not to play. Because maybe this for them at their time, for whatever reason they have, is not the right time to play. And if that's the case, then that's perfectly fine by me and hopefully is going to be by everybody else.
I completely agree. There's just so much going on right now that it's like you really can't fault anyone for any decision they make. Just hopefully the NBA finds a way to be able to use basketball as a platform for much, much more. And I think that this is actually an opportunity where the players can take advantage of this because, you know, right now, you know, basketball being on our TVs, that's when we're all going to be tuning in. And yeah, if they can get their message across there, I think it could be very impactful. So
yeah, what I was told by someone, and I apologize for interrupting you, but what I was told by someone with the league is these games are going to matter to crown a champion, but we need to make sure that they matter for what it can do for our communities. And I think that's huge. I think the NBA is a progressive, they're a forward-thinking league, they are a player-driven league. They're going to do everything they can to involve the players to make this as positive and impactful an experience as possible.
100% agree, and as of now, it looks like, you know, the NBA could be resuming before baseball. We still don't know what's happening with baseball, so yeah. You know, I mean, that's a mess in itself. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But the NBA will also be resuming before football, so this is a big opportunity for the NBA to lead the pack on how to promote, you know, social equality and everything of the sort of that I think that the NFL and other leagues could follow in their footsteps. So just a massive opportunity for the NBA. But as we wrap up here, I want to get your finals preview as well as your finals winner. After all the craziness that's gone on, who's representing the East and the West and hoisting the trophy in the end?
Yeah, I had the Bucks and the Clippers before all of this stuff, and I'm going to stick with that. I think that they are still the two teams that are best positioned to win throughout the playoffs. I think, you know, if you're the best team, you could go play these games on the moon, and it doesn't really matter. You know, it's the best team's going to win, and those, I think, are the two best teams. So those are the two teams I have, and I'm going to lean still with the Bucks. I think that, you know, Giannis is the best player in the league right now. No disrespect meant to LeBron James at all with that, but I think Giannis is just playing at such a crazy level. They've got great depth. I think that their system and understanding of who they are, they made no real changes at the trade deadline. So they're basically coming in as the same team they were. So they're not having to incorporate new guys and learn because, you know, the trade deadline was only a month before the season shut down. So, and a big chunk of that time was, you know, spent, teams were away on the All-Star break. So it is, you know, there, some of these teams are still learning guys, but I think the Bucks are still, you know, the team to be when we get to Walt Disney World, and I'm going to stick with that.
Okay, I very much respect it, and I think that if everything does go as planned, you know, it's hard to argue that because the Bucks really did look like the best team this year. So, Keith, I want to thank you for coming back on the show. I wish you the best of luck in everything right now, and you always got a couple friends over at Setting the Pace.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, man. Y'all stay safe, you and yours. Everybody, wear your masks.
Wise words. Have a good one, Keith.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.